Well, for this special segment of MSU Today, I'm Kirk Heinze, and I have the always great pleasure of welcoming to our microphones Dr. Doug Buehler, Assistant Vice President of Research and Innovation at Michigan State University, and also Director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Today's conversation will be wide-ranging, but the focus will be on some of the rigorous, timely, and impactful research underway at Michigan State University. Doug, great to have you back. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you.
Let's do what we always do in our interviews. Let's give our listeners who may not know a whole lot about MSU Ag Bioresearch a snapshot of MSU Ag Bio. And then how does the work at MSU Ag Bio fit into the overarching research agenda at Michigan State?
Thank you. Well, Ag Bioresearch is essentially the overarching organization within Michigan State University that has responsibility for most of the food, agriculture, and natural resources research. Within the university. We're a little bit of a behind-the-scenes organization because we're really not what would you consider an academic unit. We're a mission-driven research organization, and we invest wherever we need to in the university to meet our mission. So, for example, we currently have affiliations with about 350 faculty at Michigan State University across 8 different colleges, the largest being agriculture and natural resources.
Well, Russ and I have had the pleasure over the years of visiting a lot of those research, used to be experiment stations, but now research stations around the state of Michigan. Those localized stations tend to focus their research on problems associated with the area in which they're located.
That's exactly right, and we are really kind of blessed and challenged in Michigan because we have the second most diverse agriculture behind California in the country, and so we do have quite an extensive network. But if you look at the map, each of those research centers is strategically located to match up to a major either agricultural or natural resource element of the state. Mm. For example, you know, the environment along Lake Michigan where we grow a lot of fruit and vegetables is a very unique area. So we need to have areas there because if we're not doing that research here at Michigan State University, it's not going to be done and there isn't going to be that support for these very important industries.
Before we look at some of these, hot topics now in research and some of the things that you're involved with, in your most recent issue of your excellent Futures magazine, which is a semi-annual publication of MSU Ag Bio, you featured some of the newly hired researchers. Give us a little bit of an overview of some of this new breed of researcher and how do they compare to maybe prior generations?
Well, that's a really good question, but I would say one thing generally. Because we had tough budget times the previous decade, things have been better in recent years, and we've been able to hire at a much higher pace, and we are really excited about the young people that we've been able to attract to this institution. What we look for, really, is what Ian Gray, one of my predecessors, used to say. We do fundamental research with an intended outcome. And so what we're looking for, and we believe we've been able to hire, are young people that come in here with the latest and best scientific skills, and they come here and they apply them to real problems and real opportunities. Because that's what we do here. We don't do research for research's sake like you might do at MIT or Harvard. Everything we do has to have an intended outcome to solve a problem or create an opportunity. And it seems like there's a great deal of interest among this kind of this current generation of scientists to do those types of things. They're being trained in the latest genetics and bioinformatics and all of these things that are going on, and they can come here and apply that in a way that they can see that they can have an impact on the environment, on the food supply, on health, and those kind of things. And that's the niche where we really try to build, and we're really excited about a lot of these young people. And they match up very well, I think, with some of the more experienced people we have. So we feel really good about the people we've got working for us these days.
One thing that kind of struck me as I was going through some of those bios, these folks are coming from some very diverse undergraduate backgrounds. I mean, you got people coming out of music, you got people coming out of history that end up in the science disciplines and what have you. A very eclectic group.
Yeah, and I think it reflects a couple of things. Number one is that, you know, just the world is changing. But the simple reality is that, you know, the old model of the land-grant university where you came off the farm, you knew about agriculture, you came to campus to learn science, and then you went on to do research. Now, in some ways, that's almost been flipped. We now are hiring and bringing in people that have very strong scientific skills, and we have to bring them into the fold in agriculture. And so it's a little bit of a different twist, but it brings a different set of ideas. It helps us understand the challenges of the differences in, for example, in communicating and addressing things now than in our generation. It does bring in some different perspectives and some really good opportunities.
And ever increasingly, and we've talked about this before, these researchers are working collaboratively across so many different disciplines.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that we believe that if you like to work in groups and do multidisciplinary research, there are few places in the country that are better placed to be than Michigan State University. We work really hard to keep the boundaries low so that if anybody wants to work together and they have the energy to do it, we just try to get out of their way and help them get it done.
My guest is Dr. Doug Buehler, who's the director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Doug, let's talk about a few of the things that you researchers are working on, things that have been in the news lately. Chronic wasting disease, for example.
Yes, that's a very interesting and complex situation, and we've been working very closely with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. In the previous year's state budget, there was a supplemental allocation, and we're working hand-in-hand with the Department of Natural Resources to get research and outreach going in that really important area. Actually, we will be putting out a call for research proposals here, hopefully within the next week or less, that will begin to address some of those things. But this is another example of a really complex, cross-cutting issue where we've got to bring people together from wildlife ecology all the way to medicine and everything in between, plus the communications part of it, the education of hunters and the public and all of these things that are going on. This is a real challenge, but it's also, again, an opportunity, and that's why we're here. I mean, it's our job to help try to unravel these things and help protect the public and the economy of the state.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Doug, but following this for many, many years, it seems to me this is one of those cases where the science has done a pretty good job of containing this, at least in the state of Michigan. I know there are outbreaks from time to time, but in general, science has been on top of this?
It seems like it, but sometimes these things, when you really start looking for it, there may be more. I don't want to say anything that's going to scare anybody, but that's part of what we need to do. There needs to be more and more surveillance. For example, you think about something like emerald ash borer. We thought we knew where that was, and we were, unfortunately, didn't quite get it contained, and you saw what happened. So, I think there's so many unknowns because this is a very different type of disease. It's a different type of organism. And, again, that's where we need to get on it. And that's, again, comes back to this issue that we've got to bring a wide array of scientists to address this. We're also going to try specifically not only to do this work with our own scientists, but we're also setting up this program so that we can fund research outside of Michigan so that we can bring in collaborators from other states, because there are some people out there that have some skills and experience with this that we don't have, and we want to help bring them together, because this is really a national problem. This isn't just a Michigan problem.
Well, speaking of national problems, and one that's even more current than chronic wasting disease, the PFAS situation recently emerged, and some surveys being done and a lot of testing going on, but a real emerging issue with this, apparently, this carcinogen.
Yeah, this is another one that's really complicated and is going to test our ability to do a lot of things. And at this point, since there's so many unknowns with this situation, we're kind of in a we're working to bring together what skills we have and to kind of really see what we can have here. Because people are, we're getting questions like, well, who do you have working on PFAS? Well, nobody really. I mean, a few people, but this is all so new. But what we do, and this is part of the reason why we try to staff the way we do, now we're looking at what skills do we need to address this. And we're bringing in people that are taught in toxicology and environmental cell chemistry, in the wildlife and the water areas and things, and trying to build the team together to bring together the set of scientific skills that we need to address this. And then as the funding comes along, we're in close contact with both our state legislature leaders as well as federal. And so this is an example where we have to use all of our connections and our ability to create multidisciplinary teams to be ready to start to address this, because I think this one is going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, it seems
a real challenge.
It seems to be. And I would imagine, given the nature of this and the geographic scope of this, this involves more than Michigan State University.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this is another case where, there's some other states that have been dealing with this for a while. We reach out to our colleagues and we start asking questions and we start trying to work on these things together, because, again, you're absolutely right. This is a national problem, and it's going to take national level effort to address it.
I'm talking with Doug Buehler, Assistant Vice President of Research and Innovation at Michigan State. He also serves as Director of MSU Ag Bio Research. One that's not so much in the news unless you happen to be up in the Traverse City area and read the Record Eagle up there and some, but the spotted-winged Drosophila situation.
Yes. That's another one.
First of all, tell our listeners what the spotted-winged Drosophila is.
Well, very simply, it's a fly that infests soft fruits, particularly in Michigan, cherries, blueberries, raspberries, and so on. This has been something that we've been working on for a number of years, and it's been a real struggle. It's a very, very difficult insect to control, and it impacts fruit crops where, you know, there's very low tolerance for any type of injury or infestation. It's come at a time where, particularly in cherries, prices are a bit depressed because of some of the market and trade issues. And so it's put a lot of stress on the industry because not only it impacts the quality and so on of the fruit potentially, but it's very costly to control with the technology that we currently have. So we're really looking at that and, you know, a multi-phased look at how do we do this. Immediately, we've got to figure out what we can do with the tools we have, obviously, to control it. But then you get really worried about issues like insecticide resistance and so on, and we've got to figure out the biology of this organism. How can we change management? How can we manage the orchards differently? All of the things that we go through when these new pests come into play. But yeah, that one's been a real struggle for us. I think we're making good progress. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong team of scientists that work in that area. But yeah, that's a big one in really in the fruit belt along Lake Michigan.
Well, we're talking with fruit, and we've been looking at some problems that are much in the news. Let's look at an initiative that is an issue, but it's also it's got a lot of potential for, and it's already achieving some very positive results, and that's food literacy and some of the work that you've been doing in that area. We've covered that on this program before. Russ has interviewed Cheryl, and I mm-hmm. have as well, but where are you with that initiative and some good news to report?
Well, it's certainly an interesting field to get into, particularly somebody with my background, but not to get too much into telling stories, but you know, for me, started reflecting here a few years ago about, you know, we like to talk a lot about, you know, if people just understood what we did, they would love us. Well, if you look at the trends of the level of trust in the food system and then in scientists over the last 25, 30 years, it's not going in the right direction. And if you look at what's happened during our career of, you know, just the availability of information and the different sources and all of those kind of things, you can see why people are really confused. And so we started looking at this, and I started, you know, talking to people who study these things and understand communication and all these kind of things. You know, we started seeing some things that I think, at least for me, were a little bit sobering in that, you know, we're not viewed as being particularly good listeners. Scientists like to come to the table with the answer, and you know, you say to me, "Well, I have this problem, and I want to counter it with my facts and figures," and basically feel like you're not the most intelligent person on the face of the earth. That's not helping us. And so, part of what we're trying to do here is, number one, is understand where people are at, and start to meet them and talk to them. You know, where they're at. Well, why do you believe these things to be the case? And really start picking this apart. But it's a really challenging and interesting place. I mean, we've been doing the food literacy and engagement poll now for four cycles. And, you know, it takes a while to build up some of these databases, but we're really starting to see some interesting trends. And we've really got to start. We need to realize that we need to talk to people at a level where we can reach them and address their issues, not start talking about all of the details of gene editing or GMOs or this, that, and the other. Is what concerns you about your food, and why do you feel that way, and then go from there.
Yeah, and talking with Cheryl and with you and others, really you have to meet people at a value level or even sometimes an emotional level before you can even begin to talk scientifically.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, and it's, you know, like I said, it's not a natural way of communicating for a lot of us because, you know, I'm proud of my science and I'm proud of the work we do, and by golly, you know, we need, you need to understand this, and that it doesn't work. And for me, it's been helpful because I have some people in my family who are known for many, many years and are very close to, don't always agree with a lot of the things that we do in ag bio research and similar places. But it's been very helpful to me because I sit down and talk over a glass of wine or whatever, or beer, and you start seeing that, well, you listen and you exchange. I go, well, we have to figure out how to do that more regularly and listen to people and again, address their concerns, not tell them that they don't understand.
Now, you've done several of these Hour Table listening sessions that have been very fruitful. Have you got more of those planned, or what are the next steps?
Yeah, we're continuing to work on that. We're kind of reassessing, you know, we would love to, you know, to change the world tomorrow, but we also know that we have a really rich opportunity within, you know, in campus. We're probably going to work a little bit more and reach some student groups. I think we have very good opportunities to partner with some of the commodity groups and other industry groups because they have the same concerns. And so how do we partner together and kind of leverage this? Because this is a very big issue, and it's not something that one group is going to solve. And if you look nationally, there are a lot of groups that are addressing this. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that if I had a magic wand that I would try to figure out to do is how do we bring all these groups together to work more collectively, because it is a really – you know, it's a big issue, and mm-hmm. we really need to help people understand the food system better for their own good, and they'll make better choices. They may still want to eat organic, whatever they want to do. That's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure that people are making their choices with the best information
they can
have.
With the best information available. I'm talking with Doug Buehler, director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Food choices being a large issue, there are others as well. I haven't done this before, Doug, but getting your personal, I mean, science is so much in the news and in some cases being vilified at some of the highest levels and in other cases being defended at some of the highest levels. But your own personal perspectives on some of these huge issues that have seemed to become so politicized that the science kind of gets lost in the shuffle. For example, climate change. And its potential impacts. I mean, from a personal scientific perspective, where are you in that debate?
Well, the climate issues, I think, are huge. And if you look at, you know, if you want to kind of look at it, the potential impact in a state like Michigan, where we have this very diverse agriculture, and, you know, it's been several years ago now, and it may be starting to fade into the collective memory, but 2012, we had this essentially complete crop failure. In cherries and apples because of kind of, you know, very atypical weather. We look at the extremes that we see, you know, I mean, to me, you know, from the perspective of the work that we do in ag bio research and in extension and so on, we partially to try to help move things forward, have not spent a ton of time debating, you know, the causes. But the data are there. The climate, the weather is changing. It's our job to help agriculture and natural resources businesses adapt to this. So we really try to focus on, we have a challenge here and we need to deal with it. We need more resilient plants. We need to manage things differently. We have to have more frost protection. So let's focus on the things that we can do with the reality that we're faced. And we'll let others, you know, that debate is going to take place. And you know, some of the things that for us that is a frustration is because some of the big issues in agriculture and natural resources are things that from a research standpoint, we don't have a lot of control on. So, for example, we're always trying to help producers be more efficient in whatever they do, obviously to cut their costs, because now, you know, they're under huge stress and prices. Well, part of that is due to trade issues and things like that. We have, as researchers, have essentially no control over that. Some of the labor issues, we have no control over that, but we do have an opportunity to help people be more efficient. We have the opportunity to develop labor-saving equipment and cropping systems so that there isn't quite such a need for labor. So we are always trying to piecing, I'm kind of dodging your question here a little bit, but, you know, the climate issue and dealing with weather and weird weather in some ways is nothing new in agriculture. I mean, it's been that way forever. The weather is the weather. It is very extreme, but we have to address these issues. And, you know, we've now have a what we call the Plant Resilience Institute specifically to address not only in Michigan, but, you know, globally, how do we make plants more resilient and regardless of the extreme reason for the extreme weather and climate issues.
Another thing, and you've done this in Futures Magazine several times where you featured water mm-hmm. management, water research. They say the new oil, the new gold, as we look for the next 10 to 20. But you're doing a lot of in mm-hmm. in water. Your take on water research and where it needs to go and how well we're doing.
Well, I think we're doing pretty well. I mean, we have to, you know, some of the issues with water quality and invasive species and some of the things that are going on here, and again, where the climate and the weather patterns play in here. But we clearly know that, you know, we're sitting here in one of the greatest resources on this planet in this part of the country, and it's really on us to really figure out how do we handle these things, how do we use water judiciously. When you look more globally with some of the things that go on, when a single river, you know, flows through 5-6 countries or more, you know, all of the geopolitical things with that, and how do you protect the water quality when you have, you know, these very densely populated areas are really critical to us. So I think more locally, how can we directly help, you know, put together the right kind of tools so that we irrigate properly, efficiently, some of those kind of things to really try to respect every drop of water, regardless of the use.
You know, one thing that has struck me about the whole water thing, I mentioned climate change, and I can mention some others that GMOs that have become politicized. It seems though water research is one area that has not become politicized, where you have a lot of bipartisan support for things like the Great Lakes Initiative.
Yeah, we hope that that continues. I mean, there's been some, you know, some budget issues, but the money has been sustained to this point, and we hope that it will. And we will continue to work, you know, very closely with that. I mean, for example, you mentioned some of that. The Sea Grant program is certainly one of the successes there. That program continues to be successful, and that's a really good example of a very strong collaboration between MSU and U of M.
Right.
You know, that's something that we're proud of. And so, again, this comes back to how do we reach out to various partners and work on these big issues together, because none of these things are the under the ownership of any institution or any state. These things, you know, affect everybody that's on this planet.
The last one, and then we'll wrap this up, Doug. Doug Bueller, director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Something near and dear to my heart and Russ's, we've been covering this alternative energy thing for a long time. You folks have done research in many areas, crops, biomass, wind, solar, all that sort of a thing. Future of alternative energy from your scientific perspective.
Well, I think sooner or later we're going to need it. You know, I think if we were sitting here 10 years ago, we would be talking about, you know, it's the new dawn of this. These things are going to happen. We know other things have happened. Oil prices remain, you know, on the low side, and that has slowed that research. But we've not backed away from that area of research. And so we're going to continue. I mean, obviously, this university has put an investment in solar, and it's probably going to continue. We continue to work on digesters. We continue to work on biomass crops. A lot of the processes and how do we efficiently turn these things into fuels and so on. Batteries, all of these things that are going on, they're probably not as front and center as they were 10 years ago, but there's a lot of work going on in the background because, you know, we didn't create our current energy system in 5 years, and we're not going to change it in 5 years. And so it'll be a process. But I think at some point we're going to need these alternatives, and hopefully we'll be ready when that day comes.
What I always like to do at the end of these interviews, but the take-home message for people listening to our conversation about the value and the impact of research, not only at MSU, but also at MSU Ag Bioresearch.
Well, you know, I'm obviously fairly biased on this issue, but I do believe that the work we do is very important, and working at this interface of fundamental science and application is something that I think is really important. And allows us to address issues in a timely fashion. A lot of the work we do is, you know, is high risk. It takes time, but if you look back at some of the things that we're enjoying now, they seem sort of fairly obscure 25 years ago. The things that are going on in the lab now are going to produce some things that we haven't even imagined yet, and I think that's something that we really need to think about. So for us, it's the balance of solving the current problems, spotted wing Drosophila, chronic wasting disease, but also investing in fundamental research that's going to create the things that we haven't even thought about yet.
Well, some fabulous things going on at Michigan State and MSU Ag Bioresearch. It's been a pleasure talking with Dr. Doug Bueller, Assistant Vice President of Research and Innovation at Michigan State University, and also longtime director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Doug, always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. I always enjoy talking to you, Kurt. Thank you.